Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Now, at the brink of mental collapse, a then 15-year-old Mark Hennick was determined to end his life. Flash forward to the present, and he's travelling the world, sharing his story and breaking stigmas along the way. As a public speaker and mental health counsellor, Mark has worn many hats in his endeavour to open minds and create change. Well, I'm delighted to say that he joins us today. Welcome to our show, Mark.
Hi there, thanks for having me.
So you've put your story in a book called So-Called Normal. You really have come a long way.
I sure have. And, you know, I say in the opening of the book and in the foreword that you don't really realize how far you've come until you stop and look back. And I think that's really what writing this book had done for me, that I didn't realize that I had not only recovered from my mental health problems like depression and anxiety, but that I was a whole lot better than I actually thought that I was. And I didn't realize that until I actually took scope of my life as a whole.
Yeah, that's very inspiring. So can we go back, because I know this is in the book, you were on a bridge and a complete stranger saved your life.
That's right, yeah. I had over the course of several years in my adolescence, from as young as about 10 years old until that story when I climbed up over the railing of a bridge when I was 15, I had been in and out of hospitals, psychiatric hospitals, more than half a dozen times. I felt like doctors had just given up on me because I was kind of a hopeless case, maybe, somebody who would never get better. And, you know, carrying all of those feelings when I climbed up over that railing, finally intending to die, to kill myself, it was late at night, midnight, I think, on a Sunday night. And if it wasn't for a complete stranger who stopped, who saw me on the wrong side of railing, and eventually came over and talked to me and pulled me back, if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't be alive today. So I think I've dedicated my life ever since that moment, almost 20 years ago now, to being exactly like that stranger who saved my life.
Yeah, you've become that stranger for other people now, I guess.
Well, I hope so. I don't think the work will ever be done, but people have told me that before too. That you know, this TED talk that I did a few years ago, it ended up going viral all around the world. I told the stranger the story of the stranger who saved my life, and other people have said that they've seen it and it's helped them too. So really, that's been the objective of my entire life, and I think will be moving forward.
So, were you clinically depressed? I mean, did you manage to find a reason that you were depressed and that's how you got better? Or were you just born with lower serotonin? What was the matter?
Yeah, you know, I think I explored that question quite a lot through writing the book because I didn't fully understand it either at the beginning. But really, I see now anyway that my symptoms of what I would now call depression began when I was a very young child. We had a lot of instability at home. My parents divorced at a very young age. And when we moved in with my stepfather, it turned out to be a rather abusive relationship for my mother and I. So my older sister moved out first, and then my older brother moved out. And then my mother and I started to try to leave too. And probably 7-8 times we would leave the house because of a fight of some kind. We would live somewhere else for either a couple of days or a few weeks or sometimes even a few months at a time, and then always go back. And I never really understood why my mother always went back to the place that she kept leaving. But the result for me as a young boy was a lot of instability. I felt like I never really had a lot of consistency in my childhood, and I think that lent itself considerably to my mental illness. I was eventually diagnosed with social anxiety disorder and with major depressive disorder.
Well, that's understandable considering what you went through. And forgive me for asking, because you're clearly brilliant the way you've come through this and turned your life around. But what happened? What did that stranger do? Because it can't just have been about a stranger taking you off the bridge and saving you for that moment. You must have still felt anxious and wanting to kill yourself. What changed?
Yeah, you know, that's such a great question, because I think some people, too many people, think that recovery is just an overnight thing, that suddenly, hallelujah, you're all better because somebody saved your life. And that's not at all the case. Recovery, for me anyway, and for many people, was a long, slow process. And I never fully gave up the thoughts of suicide. That's not something that you can just unthink overnight. But what I think did happen, what did change for me that night, was that I had this image burned into my mind. And it came from standing on the wrong side of the bridge railing on about an inch and a half or so of concrete. I had this stranger behind me who had been talking to me, but I didn't realize until it was already all happening, the crowds had arrived. And there was a group of young men on the sidelines at the barricades that the police had set up, and one of them shouted out for me to jump. And he called me a coward.
No.
And I remember being in the hospital after all this happened and thinking about this event and thinking, here's these two guys, these two strangers, watching the exact same situation unfold in front of them, and each of them had two totally different responses, right? And I think that's where I started in a very, very small way to realize that maybe I had more choice over how I could respond to situations too. I didn't have to choose to be on the sidelines and to be cruel and to shout things out like that metaphorically at people. I could be like the guy who had my back, who reached out and helped others. So I think it was a small change at the time, but then, like I say, 15 years later, 20 years later, I realized how impactful that small change was.
Oh, I should say so. And did you ever track the stranger down? Do you know who he is? The nice one, not the horrible one.
Yeah, so it was about a dozen years later, I had already done the TED Talk in which I talked about the stranger who saved my life. And even by that point, I had no idea who he was. I could hardly even remember. And in fact, because the talk was so popular, I began to doubt if I was even telling the truth or if I had just made it up. I mean, it was this whole angel over one shoulder, devil over the other shoulder kind of thing. It just all seemed so tidy. So I tried to find him, and I looked through all my medical records and police records, and there was no mention of him anywhere. But by then I had started doing media, speaking openly about mental health in media, because I believe strongly that that's a way to raise an effective way to raise awareness. So I went on national television here in Canada, where I'm based. I asked for the public's help in finding the stranger who saved my life. And sure enough, within a few hours, it turned out that some people had seen the television segment in which I was asking for him. The stranger had actually seen my TED Talk in which I talked about him a week earlier, and he had already written me a letter in case someday he ever found me, because he didn't know that I was still alive either. So we reconnected a short time after that. We brought him up to Toronto, Canada, where I'm based. And, you know, as soon as he saw me, he just walked directly toward me and wrapped his arms around me like he did the last time we were together, and he gave me a hug.
Oh, that must have been surreal.
Well, you know, it was funny because I told him his name is Mike. He still works. Ever since that day, he's worked in mental health counseling for young boys ever since. And as have I worked in mental health ever since. And I told Mike that I had no idea how to thank him, not just for saving my life, but for actually giving me my whole life ever since then. So the best thing I could do was to show him the life that he gave me. And I introduced him to my wife and to my then 2-year-old little boy. He's now my second little boy's godfather. He hasn't met my little girl yet, but he will soon. You know, I got to show him all the life that I was able to build because he was brave enough to be a complete stranger who didn't know what he was doing, but stopped and talked and reached out anyway.
Oh, that's a wonderful story. And at the moment, I mean, the book, The So-Called Normal, is it a memoir or self-help book? And I ask you this because obviously at the moment, mental health awareness, we need to be really aware of it because with the pandemic and everything, people are really suffering, aren't they?
They are. And, you know, I think in some ways it's both because it's primarily a memoir. It's my story. But we know from a good amount of research that the way that we break down stigma and raise awareness of mental health and why we want to do that is because it increases help-seeking behavior. It encourages people to get help when they're more aware of mental illness. And the most effective way to do that is to share our personal stories. That's how we break down stigma. So that's my objective in telling my story, to show that you know, depression, anxiety, suicidality, these things don't come out of nowhere. They happen in a broader context. And what more perfect proof of that than we have right now in the pandemic, seeing how hard it is to be isolated, to have so much change around you all the time. People get this. So why not open up about it? Your secrets will kill you. Don't let them.
Yeah. It's good, I think, that things have changed. I mean, probably not so much in your time, but certainly in the last 30 to 40 years, because people are talking about it more. Certainly celebrities are, and even royals, aren't they?
They are. And, you know, I would actually arguably say just in the last 10 years, things have changed significantly. You know, when I started doing mental health advocacy and media about 15 years ago, there was a generally unspoken rule that you don't talk about suicide in particular in media, that there is this idea that it could give people the idea to go out and do it. And there is such an idea, there is such a concept of so-called copycat suicides or suicide contagion. So we do need to be careful about talking about hard things properly and to provide resources and to provide messages of hope and recovery. But we do know that the most effective way to prevent suicide is to talk about it, is to get people to open up about it, so that way we can actually identify who's at risk.
Yeah, very good advice. Well, there's obviously much more in the book, which is called So-Called Normal. It's by Mark Hennick, who we're speaking to now, and you can buy it right now from our website. Mark, how are you doing during lockdown?
You know, I've heard this from other people who have histories of mental health problems as well. I've actually been doing really well.
Yeah.
And I think I credit my experience with mental illness for that, because I've had 20 years of experience of learning how to cope with difficult things, of learning how to be resilient. So, you know, I practice something called acceptance and change. The situation is what it is. We don't have to like that. We can accept it. And only then can we lean into this change.
Acceptance and change. I like that. Mark,
I hope that it's useful for your listeners as well to be able to cope with the current circumstances.
I'm sure. Well, thank you very much for sharing your story, and thanks for being on the show. If we want to see you on TED Talks, we just literally put your name in TED Talks, do we?
Yeah, that's it. You look me up in Google or on TED, and likewise for the book. I'm not very difficult to find. I'm also very active on social media as well.
Okay, lovely. Well, you stay safe, and thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Take care. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand-new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.